So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting, anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this hunter initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. And today we're going to talk a little bit about hunting and conservation and some of the issues that we face right now within the quote unquote industry of hunting, and some of the stuff that we see in social media and media, journalism, so on and so forth. Today I have with me Mark Hall, and Mark is a journal, I don't, I'm gonna say journalist. He's a writer, and he runs a very really cool blog actually that kind of touches on a lot of stuff that people don't want to hear about, and might strike a nerve with you a couple times when you read some of this stuff, which is good, because that's what it's meant to do. It's meant to get you thinking about some of the stuff that we got going on. Without further ado, Mark, how are you?
Hey, I'm awesome. Looking forward to be on your show.
Well, thanks for taking the time. Then you're in BC, right?
Yep, British Columbia, Canada. I'm
Mm-hmm.
just right along. Well, if I look out my office window there, I can see the western slope of the Rockies, and I'm just about
Nice.
20 minutes north of the Montana border. So it's a little town in northern Montana called Eureka.
Okay.
It's just right close to the 49th parallel, the international boundary, and that's the closest place to me. So
Nice.
great place to be.
Well, I originally found your blog from the Journal of Mountain Hunting, or
Oh,
Mountain Hunting.
Adam.
Yeah,
Yep.
Adams.
We did a blog a couple months ago and he ran an article.
Yeah, I started working with him just a couple months ago myself. I wrote a few articles for
Oh,
them,
cool.
and I, was poking around looking at other guys' articles and stuff, and I came across yours, and I started reading your blog, and I was like, wow, this guy's got a really interesting, perspective, and got a lot of good information. So that's why I brought you on today, because quite frankly, I'm not happy with the way things are going right now, and I saw that you're not either.
I think I mean we share that in common, and I think it echoes a lot of people. I think if people in the hunting community care and they read what's going on, I think we're in a larger pool of people that are concerned. I think there's a smaller kind of portion of us, I think, are able to kind of drill down on the topics and articulate it in a way that reaches people. I think the average people have these feelings and these emotions, but they just can't quite put their finger on it. They can't articulate it, or they can't really have a nuanced discussion about some of this stuff. So, and that's kind of where I found some of my writing is kind of hitting people that way. I do get a lot of feedback, and people are like, yeah, that speaks to me. This is what our family always believed, and that sort of thing. So that makes me feel good that base is out there in the hunting community. It just takes a few people to kind of contextualize it and bring it into words or video. So.
Yeah, I think the numbers are way higher than anybody would actually imagine, because there's so many people that, like you said, kind of feel this way towards certain issues, but they don't, they're either unaware of the true issues at hand. They're, not, they're just not informed, because I mean, the information's out there if you go searching for it. But as you indicated in some of your articles, it's not there in the mainstream media. And there is stuff in the mainstream media, but it's all this negativity and all this that stuff that kind of invokes or evokes a emotional response, and most of the time it's anger. But it doesn't. It doesn't really give people the tools to help make the situation better, or to or even just to get a grasp for themselves and on what they can do.
Totally true. I mean, I have people write me sometimes, or they talk to me, and they tell me they're concerned, they're frustrated, and they're looking for advice on, hey, what can I do? What can I do to help? What can I do, to help conservation? And I say, basically, You know, if your time's limited, the single most important thing you can do for wildlife conservation is to inform yourself about what the big issues are, and learn about them. There's probably nothing that's a bigger threat to hunting and wildlife conservation, you know, in a bigger picture, is like what you just said, that people that are uninformed, that don't know. And that's one of the biggest pieces of advice I give is just simply get informed and try to inform yourself on a topic from as many sides as possible. And a lot of times that means going out to people that have, you know, very different perspectives from ours and simply trying to understand where they're coming from as well. You know, and then from there, I tell people then the next step is to start getting politically active, talking to your elected officials, telling them, you know, that you care, that wildlife and hunting matter to you, that you're concerned about what's going on, help, you know, educate them, informed advocacy rather than just screaming at your elected officials, give them, transfer some of that knowledge that you've researched and help guide them. So.
Yeah. No, you just made me think of a question that I've had myself. You know, for a guy who is limited, that already knows what you just touched on. But what would you say? Let me back up. What would you say is that right now is the three, top issues and hunting and conservation issues right now that hunters are facing? What is the three biggest hot spots or hot points right now?
Hot points. I think there's kind of maybe two things going on. One would be with hunting and one would be with wildlife conservation. So strictly on, you know, the way of life of hunting, I think the three biggest things, yeah, that I say, is I think there's a lack of empathy. And I think that's not just in hunting. It's in society as in a general, if you follow any kind of like public forums on any topic, economy, politics, whatever, sports, whatever it is,
right,
there's just a general thing in society now where people are losing respect for each other. People are losing the ability to understand another person's perspectives, just simply to understand where they're coming from and not try to put people in a box. Or demonize people because they have different views. And I think that's a big key one in hunting. And I think that's on both sides, you know, non-hunters and their understanding and empathy towards, you know, what hunters are, what we do, what we stand for, and the other way,
right.
You know, hunters and understanding non-hunters' perspectives and just simply saying, hey, it's different than what I believe, but, you know, I can respect for your, where you're coming from. I think we could be a lot farther ahead if that thing was in place. I think another big, one of the big top threes affecting hunters right now is, I think hunters are on the ropes. I think we're back on our heels a little bit in the social forums, and we're struggling to try to describe hunting, in 2018. And I think that stems from a couple things. I think hunting as a community, we're stuck in the past. We're stuck in trying to describe what hunting was and what it is, where society wants to talk about what hunting ought to be. And that's very difficult for a lot of people, you know, to enter into that discussion, because what's saying what hunting ought to be moving forward and, you know, in the 21st and into the 22nd century means change, and people don't like change. They resist change. So I think that's, that's definitely, you know, one of the big ones there. And then I think the other third key thing that's affecting hunters, I think is an in-depth understanding of what society, expects from us. Let's put it that way. I mean, The non-hunting part of society outnumbers us, and depending
Mm-hmm.
on, you know, what state or jurisdiction you're in, it's a pretty substantial
Oh, yeah.
difference in that ratio, right? Like little places, like I've heard, like, you know, in Vermont and stuff, it's like, I mean, you're talking about hunting, you know, population that's like less than 1%, it's a fraction of a percent of the population. So it's important, I believe, that we start to understand and tap into what society's expectations are for us. And I think that's a barrier that we're not doing that. And it's a fairly simple formula. I think I boiled it down to kind of three things and, you know, three pillars that society expects that the motives of the hunter are for sustenance. I think most people, non-hunters, are okay if you're hunting for food. They expect the character of a hunter to be one whose intentions are, you know, to be, to follow the law, to be knowledgeable, to be skilled, you know, at
Right.
what you're doing. And then third, that hunters display emotions and behavior that are appropriate for the acts that we've done, essentially taking the life of a wild animal, right? And I think as long as those three things are in place in the eyes of society, most people, you know, unless they have really strong philosophical views about, you know, animal rights, that most people, the bulk of the bell curve, you know, that 80% in the middle, are okay with hunting.
Right.
And I think that's a big issue that's facing us, is that we're not tapping into that as well as what we could be.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think we're still resisting. Hey, if you're against hunting, well, we're going to put you in this box over here and just, like, you know, try to shut you down, as opposed to going, how does the non-hunters think? How do they see us from their shoes? And how can we come across more
Right.
authentic? So
And I think
those
a
would be
lot
kind of
of
the
that,
three top things.
I think a lot of that has to, like, so I'm going to take social media again because this is, it's been a blessing and a curse more than a blessing, for the hunting industry. And as a non-hunter, you look at a guy standing there behind a, you know, big 6-point bull elk or whatever, and you see him smiling. And immediately what goes through your head is trophy. That guy shot that thing for the horns on his head and only for that. And you know, a picture, they say a picture, you know, is worth a thousand words or whatever, and it is, but it's up to the person who's looking at it to come up with those thousand words. So unless your narrative of that photo, you know, it's just going to come off as a grip and grin trophy photo unless you're able to somehow in short, because nobody has the time to read anything long, but you know, in a few words, oh, you know, I feel very blessed or whatever it is that you have to say that shows that you're remorseful, that you're thankful for that animal's life, that you're going to eat that animal, and you know, all those three topics that you touched on. And I think it's important that us as hunters are always putting that out there because,
Yeah,
yes,
definitely.
Facebook is very good. I'm going to use Facebook because it's the largest. Facebook, even Instagram, is very good about only showing you content that you're interested in. For the most part, I mean, that's what the
Totally. Yep,
algorithm's set
totally.
up to do.
Yeah. Yep.
So yes, for the most part, when you put up a grip and grin photo, I'm just going to use arbitrary numbers. Let's say 95% of the people that are going to see it are like-minded. So it's okay. But it's that 5% that's seeing it that's not like-minded that you're either alienating or you're helping sway to towards the hunting, what's the word I'm looking for? That are empathetic or sympathetic with hunters. Then they don't necessarily have to become hunters, but they're not against you.
There's definitely A lot of curiosity in the non-hunting community that, wants to peek into, our world and go, geez, we hear a lot about this. What goes on? What's it really like, right? So they get these little thin slices of appear into the world, as opposed to, what you've been advocating for is taking people out, the Hunter Up initiative, whether it's recruiting, people or just simply taking a non-hunter, out. That's the bigger snapshot that people, need to see to kind of make an informed decision. But so when people are just kind of peeking in just to say, hey, what's going on over here, and it is just a one-time photo, or a video or a 22-minute, television show or something like that, it's such a thin slice of a very, very complex, nuanced world in hunting for people to make a very rapid decision on. It's tough.
We're good at making those rapid decisions nowadays.
Yeah, everybody is, right? As the world's kind of
Yeah.
forcing people to make a snap decision about things to move forward. But as valuable as what social media can be for a tool, like this type of discussion and getting information around, it's also a tool that kind of lacks that nuance component to it. And that's definitely coming back to hurt us. We haven't figured out how to master that tool to communicate a more nuanced discussion. That's definitely another thing that's contributing to our maturity in a digital age. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. You said something that made me think to clarify something about the Hunter Up initiative. So I got not a lot, but enough kickback or pushback about bringing non-hunters or bringing somebody new into hunting. And you said something that I don't think I clarified very well, is that it's not necessarily going out and recruiting a guy who doesn't hunt and bringing them into hunting so that there's more hunters. It's just introducing somebody so that when the time comes, they can understand where you're coming from. They've gone
Yeah,
out, they've
okay,
experienced it.
exactly,
It's
yeah.
not for them, okay? Yeah, this is not for me. I don't like sitting in the miserable cold. I don't like hiking my ass all over the mountain. But now I have a found respect for why you do what you do, and it's not just driving around in a pickup truck with a turret on the top of my and just shooting every freaking animal you see. Because let's be honest, those who don't know, it's very easy for their mind to go that way. If you, especially if you listen to or look at how hunters have been portrayed in cartoons, in movies, in media and journalism, and all this stuff that's mainstream. That doesn't come from the hunting community, and even stuff that comes from the hunting community, because there's some stupid ass shit that's out there too. That, I mean, for instance, there was a guy posted something on Instagram, and it went viral. It is he was running over a hog with his ATV. Like the hog kept charging him, and he kept running it over with the ATV. And I'm like, take this shit down. I contacted him directly. I didn't comment on it. I said, if you're a hunter and you believe in hunting, you should take this down, because yeah, it's kind of a interesting thing to look at. Like, it's got the awe factor and whatever, and it's gone viral, and it's helping your social media page out because you're getting a lot of traffic. But think about the damage that it's doing, because every non-hunter that has seen this, you just added another negative picture, negative view in that person's head of what hunters are and how we are. Now,
No, exactly.
Every one of us hunters is this jackass right here running stuff down with the ATV.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the analogies that, you know, that I use is there's a big gap between hunting and the non-hunting community in understanding each other. And that gap, it's only human nature that people want to close that gap to try to understand the other side. And the interpreter that closes that gap is culture. Is society's culture, whether it's the culture of the country, of a state, of a community, you know, whatever. There's a culture there, and if they haven't been exposed to the things that you're talking about, like really understanding, you know, everything that goes on in a hunt, then their brain is picking and choosing these things from what they've seen in the world to close that gap to go, oh, this is what that thing is they call hunting.
Right.
Because I saw this video, I read this article in the newspaper, and I saw this thing on TV, and that's how people close the gap. And it goes both ways as well. You know, I see a tremendous amount of hunters that don't understand non-hunters' views. It's basically if somebody says, well, you know, I'm opposed to hunting, then they're just stuck in a box. But there's a lot of different philosophical views for people that are opposed to hunting. I mean, animal rights, you know, that's a very hardcore philosophy that actually extends to human interference in an animal's life in every respect in the world, whether it's using them for food or hunting it, and it even goes against owning pets. That,
right.
I mean, that's against, and even in some cases, actually viewing wildlife, you know, going out on wildlife tours and stuff is seen as a violation of an animal's sort of right to live a free and unencumbered life. Then there's animal welfare, you know, which is more concerned about that animals are treated properly. Those are the ones that go on to film sets and to farm operations and say, you know, are principles of humane treatment, you know, in place. So there's different, you know, levels or different, you know, different gaps between hunting and non-hunting and going in both
right.
directions. And we're both filling that gap in, you know, with our own, you know,
yeah.
with our own data that we're borrowing, and definitely for non-hunters to understand hunters, that the information that they're pick and choosing from mainstream media is definitely not helping our case. And what you
no.
said earlier, some of the own stuff, our own stuff that we're putting out there is not helping to fill the puzzle together. So,
right. No. All right, here's my take on. And I don't want to say the non-hunting, but I'm going to say the anti-hunting. Like, I'm all for you believing in whatever you want to believe in. Oh, here, let me even back up a little bit. If you're a non-hunter and you're against hunting for, you know, because you're animal, you know, animal rights or, you know, taking another life, you better be a vegan. If you're vegan, I completely respect your viewpoint, because if you tell me that going out and hunting is wrong and then you go down the street and you eat a hamburger, to me you're a freaking hypocrite.
Yeah,
you know, I've also had fishermen like get into it with me on social media, or I had people get into it with me on social media about hunting. And then I go back and I look at their profile and there's pictures of them fishing or whatever, or they're taking selfies again of their steak dinner. And that just doesn't sit with me. Like, I lose my shit, because to me, you're a hypocrite. What is the life of that fish or that domesticated cow? How's that differ from me going out into the wild and shooting a deer? If you're vegan
completely.
And you have that perspective, you know what? I commend you. That's your choice. But again, that's your choice. And I don't impose my lifestyle or my life views and what I want to do on you. Please don't do it to me. That, and that's just like, that's the way I've lived my life. Like I feel that way about it, everything, you know, gays.
I mean, I even,
anything you want to, any I've topic even, you want to talk about, that's, you know,
That's the way you live. Those are your principles. No, I mean, that's great. I mean, I've had this discussion with a few people as well. And even, you know, the argument about, you know, choosing a vegan lifestyle, to me is not, it still isn't even a clean one. It's still not an ethical high road when it comes to conservation, you know, kind of at a global perspective, because what is the stats? I think I remember reading this from some United Nations reports that it's somewhere around 50 to 70% of the habitable area of the Earth's surface. So we exclude kind of rock, desert, you know, just narrow that down to the habitable, productive land on the Earth. I think it's about close to 70% of that is been converted to agriculture.
Wow.
So, as you know, once a native ecosystem disappears to become an agriculture crop, along goes biodiversity and tons of species of you know, insects and wildlife and you know, and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, even a vegan lifestyle, you have to consciously accept that you're contributing to the degradation of ecosystems, which are taking out, you know, wildlife in an indirect manner. And one of the things I've always believed why hunting is on an ethical high road, you know, if you're hunting for, you know, for your protein, is the one thing that hunters are always doing is they're advocating and standing up for the environment and for wildlife habitat, whether it's outright protecting it or conserving it or managing it properly, because it provides the home for biodiversity and all this wildlife, of which we're harvesting, you know, a tiny percentage of the species that depend on these ecosystems. So, you know, from an ethical point of view, it's like, yeah, that's where my protein comes from. And so I'm going to want to protect the garden, which benefits everything, where if that's converted to agriculture to feed more and more mouths, the more people that convert, you know, to strictly a vegetarian or vegan lifestyle, that somewhere around the world, some ecosystems got to go by the wayside to provide for that. So the way I look at it is I'm the same thing. I totally respect, you know, people that are making that choice, because they're making it from a good place. They're saying, hey, I want to lessen my impact on the earth and try to live more sustainably. So I'm making this choice and I'm doing the same thing. And I have these reasons why I choose to, you know, to get my protein from the wild. And so I see us both as, you know, individuals trying to make sustainable choices in this world right now. And that's a good thing. That's not anything to separate us over, you know, the choices of what we put in our mouth. So,
No, I mean, even if you back up and go to the simplest form, let's say there is no crops, and you're a vegan gatherer, okay, you're still competing with wildlife. You're still taking food from them, you know, to feed yourself. So really at any level, it goes back to what you were saying right now about hunting. If you're going to be taking, you got to be putting back. And hunters do that. Even the guy that's not hunting to feed his family, he's sport hunting. He's going to eat it. He's not going to let it go to waste, or somebody's going to eat it. It's not going to go to waste, but his intentions are not, he's not a quote unquote meat hunter. He does it because he enjoys hunting, whatever. In the end, it's a put and take, you know. he's putting back, he's giving back as much as he's taking, you know, where I think on the opposite end of the spectrum, for the most part, there's no system in place for that. There's no excise tax on when you go to buy carrots that puts money back into habitat for
conservation. Yeah, exactly.
There's not. Okay.
Yeah.
And I guarantee
you. I mean, there's people in the world working on trying to do that kind of stuff, you know, ecological goods and services, you know, that whole field. So, I mean, there is some.
Yeah, they're working on it, but good luck trying to convince the whole other 80%.
The other part of this kind of moral ethical discussion, or, you know, around food, you know, part of the nuance in this discussion has to do around the sentience of living beings, right? So, I mean, we're typically, you know, hunters are harvesting animals for food that are, you know, I guess people would consider more sentient beings, right? I mean, we do know animals have personalities and characters, and, you know, and they think and do stuff and plan things out, and you know, they have a higher level of, you know, sentience. And so people start to kind of rank food by this scale of sentience, right? Mm-hmm. And when you get down to plants, now all of a sudden it's sort of like, well, that's okay, because these aren't sentient beings, right? They don't mm-hmm. feel. But I mean, man, there's some stuff, you know, out there in science. Here in British Columbia, there's a scientist at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver that's got some really interesting research out. She's on TED Talks. I think her name's Dr. Simone, where she's been studying old growth trees in coastal British Columbia. And she's actually discovered that in these old growth forests, the trees are actually like they connect their roots together. Different trees, the roots kind of weld together. Wow. Then they can actually start to communicate and flow nutrients and stuff back and forth. And there's kind of a, you know, I mean, for any better sense of the word,
community,
like they're actually communicating with each other. And one of the bizarre things that she's discovered is in a forest with all these trees and all this different progeny and all these different, you know, parent trees, if something happens, like, say, drought stress, that a big parent tree through root grafting actually can tell which of the trees it's grafted to are its own progeny, and it will preferentially export nutrients and water to just its own offspring.
Huh.
And I'm like, if you can't tell me that there's something going on there at a higher cognitive level in the plant world, I think you got your head in the sand. So, you know, when you start to talk about separating, you know, sentience and living animals and what your moral right is, what you shouldn't or shouldn't be eating, it gets mm-hmm. pretty blurry when you get into the plant
yeah,
world,
no,
too.
Seriously.
So,
yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just like, we might as well just stay away from those discussions and kind of go back to what we said. Let's everybody just try to do something that, you know, living and taking from the land, you know, whether it's food or anything else that you're doing, mm-hmm. But to do it and make conscious choices to have as little impact as possible. So,
right. Yeah. I you know, I feel if there's not going to be something in place that's, you know, worldwide, it's upon each individual to do something. And it might just be as simple as not throwing your freaking gum wrapper out the window, you know, just taking steps, you know, lessening your carbon footprint that, or, you know, whatever, so that you are giving back to the stuff that you're taking. And,
yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah. Let's go back to, like, you wrote an article on, I'm trying to remember the name of it, because there's two that kind of are somewhat, they're similar, but they're not the same. It was the hunting industry. I remember your cartoon more than anything, the coffin. Now the arm sticking out. That was a great cartoon, by the way.
Yeah. It's one of the tricks I've learned about how much your posts get around the world.
Mm-hmm.
is whenever I've included my own cartoons,
Okay.
they go wild. If I
Yeah.
use a stock photo, they don't
Yeah.
travel as far. So
Yeah.
that one traveled far because it had a hand-drawn cartoon as the
Yeah, no, that
Yeah,
was
so there was that one, which is the one that you first reached out to me about. I
Yes.
think it was called the Hunting Industry
Our worst enemy, I think.
Savior Saboteur.
Oh, Savior Saboteur, that's what it was.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
then there was a recent one where we were chatting about there last week or whatever, on the one thing that journalists and wildlife scientists need to stop doing
Oh
or stop
yeah.
talking about, something like that. That was the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that real quick. What the journalists and wildlife biologists, what is that one thing? What is the thing that they need to stop doing?
So the one thing they need to stop doing is they need to stop talking about trophy hunting. And the primary reason is I get a strong sense, and I kind of ran some Google trends that I put into my article, that there appears to be kind of a global downturn in people's interest in wildlife conservation. If you kind of just look at what people search for on the internet over time, and if what people search for, if you can accept that that is data that represents what people are interested in, Google is showing us that worldwide people's interest in wildlife conservation is declining, and people's interest in searching for trophy hunting is on the increase. And that's a huge concern for me as a conservationist, because there's no bigger threat to wildlife and conservation in the world is when people stop losing interest in it. And so trophy hunting is an emotional topic. It's a sensationalized topic that sells a lot of papers. When it's flashed out there, it can usually be supported by some pretty cool pictures, if you want to put it that way.
Right.
So when the media does it, the media is doing it to create controversy, create a polarized debate to attract attention, sell papers, and get viewers. When wildlife scientists are using the word trophy hunting or their research trophy hunting, they're kind of doing the same thing. They're using it to draw attention to themselves, to their work, to their branding. Wildlife scientists should be talking about wildlife biology, and the impacts of hunting on wildlife, or the impacts, of anything, on wildlife, and making recommendations on society. Unless you're a social scientist and you're looking at human behaviors and motivations and that sort of thing, then fair game. You can talk about why people are interested in trophy hunting. But for a wildlife scientist to be kind of dabbling into using that language, it's just another thing that's diverting, I believe, diverting the general public's attention away from some of the serious wildlife conservation and habitat issues that that are out there,
Right.
whether they're here in North America or worldwide. And I wrote a paper about that and just said this is a big concern I have, that there's too much attention being brought to this very small topic and sensationalizing it, and that's hurting conservation around the world. And I basically just said, look, people, you need to stop doing this. There's a higher purpose, to be served here. And the higher purpose of media and journalism, I believe, is to start informing people, about what's going on in the environment, what's threatening biodiversity, and being the conduit between these issues and politicians. I mean, my God, we've seen it here in the province of British Columbia, that our elected officials are strictly using media to guide wildlife management decisions, and that's how we lost the grizzly bear hunt last year. So there's a higher purpose in the media, and there's bigger issues, and I think they need to focus on those, and wildlife scientists need to stay strictly focused on informing decision makers on better path forward for wildlife management. So
Yeah. It's Definitely a uphill battle that we have to try to get people to get away from that. But media is not going to change. The newspapers have been doing that.
Nope.
You know, journalists have been doing that since the dawn of time. You know, since it started, really. I mean,
And
and it's just
that's
human
what
nature
sells in
too.
today's ages. Yeah, I mean it's human nature to, be to not look away when there's a car accident kind of thing,
Yep,
right?
you
And
took the words right out of
that's
my mouth. Yeah.
what the media plays on. The media can't reach masses with nuanced discussions. So it has to be very clear. There's a good player and a bad player. There's a for and against. They just need to be able to present that dichotomy. And that, hunting plays into that very easily. They can very easily take something and show, this polarized kind of perspectives. And one of the things I always try to do when I write is like I'll bring these issues to light and kind of rail on whichever side needs to be kind of, railed on or whatever. But the end, I always try to wrap it up with like, what can you do for this issue? And basically, in that particular one, I've sort of called out to, one, the hunting community and the non-hunting community is you need to start calling this stuff when you see it. I mean, you've got to start telling journalists and newspapers and this sort of thing, just saying, look, stop covering this stuff. We don't like the way you're portraying these things because it's diverting attention away from more important things to do with wildlife conservation. And I think even the media itself is going to react to that. If its viewers say, look, we don't like this, it goes up the corporate tower pretty quickly and things change. So the power lies with the people. And that's just one of the topics where I've kind of asked people to start jumping on people saying, look, stop talking about this. Move on.
Yeah, no, it's smart. I'm curious to see if anybody'll to do anything about it. It's gotta be a
That if there was a fourth thing we added to that first part of our discussion, what's the thing that's hurting or hindering hunting? And I think that's it. It's mobilizing people into action. And man, it's hard. It's like, hey people, great, you're concerned about this, you're complaining about it, let's do something. Here's how you can do it. And then all of a sudden, like crickets, right?
It's crazy. So, you know, I've always kind of known this, not always, but ever since I got into the whole social media thing and, you know, self-promoting and whatnot, that unless there's something like some immediate like reward for somebody or a chance at something, it's very hard to get anybody to do anything that you want them to do. Whether the end game is like, for instance, this is really for everybody. I'm not doing it for my own personal gain. So let's talk about the Hunter Upper Initiative. I contacted, I want to say 40 to 50, quote unquote, industry professionals. And I invited half of them. So my top 20 of the 40 to 50, I invited them to get on a, don't know what to call it, a conference call. Let's just call it a conference call with me to discuss what it is that I'm trying to do to see if we can't, the 20 predominant people in this industry, including myself, what we can do to bring it to light. And I had probably 10 of the 20 respond and say, oh, yes, that was something that I'd like to do. And in the end, the day of, or leading up to the day of, I hadn't had a single one of those 10 confirm and actually get on the conference call with me to discuss it. So, like, if I can't expect our industry leaders, quote unquote leaders, to be interested in promoting this agenda or this initiative of mine, how can I expect, you know, Joe Hunter to do it? It's like, you're an industry professional. You understand what's going on. You've been around. I went to those people that are outspoken in hunting and conservation and the stuff circling what I'm trying to do. I didn't just pick, 20 most popular guys. If these guys don't want to take time out of their day to do that, how do I expect somebody who's not engulfed in hunting, not entrenched in what, the industry, how do I expect somebody who's not to do this stuff? And I can't. And it's like, it's sad.
That's frustrating. Yeah, that's frustrating.
I was a little angry. I was frustrated, but more than anything, I was deeply saddened. I was saddened by the fact that there wasn't like, oh yeah, John, yeah, let's do this shit. Let's make this happen. Yeah. Let's at least one day, 2 days, just launch everything out there and put it out there so that maybe between us 20 influential people or the 50 that I initially contacted, go out and say, or let's put this out there for a couple of days and maybe we can touch 0.5% of our following, 0.25% of our following, freaking 3 people that follow us each. That's another 150 people. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's, I lost a lot of sleep over it. Cause I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, it's either one or two things. Either people just don't give a shit about it enough to, it's not affecting them enough directly right now that they just can't see the big picture, or I'm just that insignificant of a person in the industry and they just don't have time for me. And I'm hoping that it's the second of the two, because you're not hurting my ego. I really could give two shits.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for freaking 20 years.
Yeah. I think there's
$1 off of it. So I really don't give a shit about that.
Yeah. 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 Cut my paycheck in half. Right. Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. I mean, I feel for you. I feel, what you're trying to do. And I think there's one of the things that I see that lacks, in the hunting community is our thought leaders. If you get into business, if you get into other areas of, social advocacy and stuff, you can always find key people that are thought leaders, that are driving innovation, that are thinking way out there. I mean, a lot of times I'll tweet stuff out there, something about conservation, and people will come back, with these self-limiting beliefs about, well, this is just, how we do it. And the thing I always throw back is like, what would Elon Musk do if you told him this was the problem? Like, right? I mean, there's a thought leader. The guy's thinking, hey, I want a colony on Mars. That, he's out there, kind of thing. I don't see that. I don't see that in the hunting community. I don't see people thinking about 2-3 generations down the road and putting the pieces in place now. And I think that's what you're talking about. You're talking about probably something that's starting something now that will outlive you. You will never see the benefit, of this. And Shane Mahoney touched on this, I think, in his keynote address there to the Elk Foundation in 2017. Or maybe it was the 2016 or somewhere in there. But they made a film about it called Relevance, right? And that was a key message that he had, was when we become too few, we become irrelevant. And he was speaking directly to what you're talking about, which is the future of hunting and more people getting into it. And the other sad part about it, which, kind of ties into the article that I sort of wrote about, about the hunting industry, is the hunting industry itself has managed to kind of supplant the hunting institution. And in my opinion, the institution of hunting used
Right.
to be the family unit. My whole entire life, to do with hunting is all about my relationship with my family, my dad and my grandfather, who's no longer alive, right? Like, I mean, there's some really, really deep stuff there. To me, that's the institution of hunting. And I think it is for a lot of people, but that's been lost. And again, I think this is just indicative of society and family, generally. It's been replaced by corporate brands. The institutions nowadays are not the church. The institutions are sports franchise. You wear the jackets, you wear the hats. The hunting industry, I think, has become that institution, and the institutions are brands. You're either this guy or this brand or that brand, and Kuyu and Sitka, like which has the best clothing, or Matthews or Hoyt, or whatever. That's the type of stuff that's going on. So that, to me, confers a tremendous amount of responsibility on these people that you were trying to reach out to say, you're the institution now. You have to be the thought leaders, because this is what the people are looking to say, where do I need to go? When I was younger, I would be looking to my grandfather and my father, just saying, what's right or wrong here? Where should I, how should I be pointing myself, right? And it's not for a lot of people that way, and it's sad that it's not, but that's the real world. And I think if some of these things are going to change, it's going to have to be those key people that you're trying to reach out to, saying, folks, this is a direction we got to go. I'm willing to risk my reputation. I'm willing to risk my brand and my corporation, but we have to start going in this direction. So.
Yeah, I mean, in some aspects, we got to be thankful that the brands became the institution. Because hunting as we know it could be a lot worse now already in this day and age. And I brought this up in that article that I wrote, is that the only thing that keeps hunting going is, and I simplify it by saying greed, but what I mean by that is it hunting, even though we're a small community and where our numbers are tiny, is such a big money-making industry that the government can't ignore us.
Totally.
And if it went away, hunting, what, let's say tomorrow there was no more hunting. If you think about the $43 billion that stem from hunting, that's tremendous amount of tax dollars, jobs in every single possible, because I mean, if you travel out of state to
Totally.
hunting, there's hotels, there's gas stations, there's restaurants, there's whatever, anything you can think of can tie back to hunting. And it's been such a part of the United States since the United States has been the United States, that you're taking away a giant chunk. And I think people take that for granted. Like, oh, it's not going to go away because that's, it's American. But there's been plenty of American things that have gone to the wayside that are no longer, so.
World's changing, yes.
Yeah, and
And see, that's a big,
I don't want to
I
see
mean,
our
what I
legacy
write
go
about,
away.
a lot of what I write about, I try to come at it from, with a Canadian perspective. That's where my focus, is.
Right.
And that this is, part of my agenda is to try to educate and wake up, the Canadian hunting community, because we're so strongly influenced by you know, the hunting industry in the United States, those dollar figures you're talking about are astronomical compared to, you know, up here. And I'm trying to wake people up to the fact that yes, you see that in the magazines, you see that on TV, you read about it. You know, all the you know, the pro hunters and stuff are talking, you know, that language. That's the messaging. But I'm like, that's in the United States. That's not our situation here in Canada. So for example, just, you know, here in British Columbia, our fish and wildlife branch, our wildlife branch, our total budget to run that is about $35 million a year. So we're the
For the whole country.
largest
Oh, that's British, just British
jur
Columbia.
for the province. So we're the
Okay.
largest jurisdiction in Western North America. I mean, basically British Columbia extends, you know, basically extends across the entire Western United States, right?
Oh,
From
yeah.
Washington to the Mexico border. We have more big game species than any other jurisdiction in North America, land mass, complexity of ecosystems, you name it. And our entire wildlife management program is run on $35 million a year. Hunting in British Columbia generates 15 million, 14 to $15 million a year, and we're fighting to get all of that money put back into the resource. Right now, there's only a small levy that comes off of our hunting licenses and tags that's dedicated back to wildlife conservation, and it's in the order of magnitude of $2.5 million a year. So, you know, when I see hunters here in Canada going, yeah, well, you know, hunting pays for conservation, I'm like, no, it doesn't. Cross the line, it pays a pretty big portion of it, and in some states it carries pretty much the entire load of wildlife management. But it's not the case here. You can't ride on the success of the system that you guys have. It's like you need to fight for that up here, right? So we're close neighbors, you know, things are very similar, but from that perspective, man, the economic engine behind hunting is just, it's just not here, and
And
that's
I
a
mean, it
scary
could be
thing.
you guys have, I think last time I looked, don't isn't percentage wise you have more hunters per capita than we
Per
do?
capita, yeah. Like, I mean, in British Columbia here, there's only 4.7 million people in the whole entire province, right?
Oh wow.
And you know, about
We got more, we have more than 4.7 in
115
Phoenix,
thousand,
Arizona. Yeah.
115,000 hunters. You know,
Yeah.
that's just resident hunters. So, you know, the outfitters bring in, you know, probably in the neighborhood of a few thousand non-resident hunters every year. But that's a pretty, you know, small piece of the puzzle. But yeah, percentage wise, you know, we're probably still sitting only around like two, I think it's 2.7% of the
Okay,
population or
I thought it
something
was
like
higher than
that.
that.
So it's not that far off. But yeah, that economic engine isn't here. And I mean, yeah, that's scary.
Man, yeah, you guys got to figure out something over there. That's rough. That's even rougher than we got. Oh man. And I mean, there's a lot more land. And well, not a lot more land necessarily, but I mean, there's a lot of land, but a lot more wild land to manage, I would imagine. Wow.
Yep. I mean, just about everything in this province is public land or crown land that we call it. So, you know, the vast majority is all public access. So it's all managed by the province. So you got this huge land base, very complex ecosystems, lots of species, rich in biodiversity. And yeah, basically I think out of all of our neighboring jurisdictions, Alberta, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Utah, we are the lowest funded jurisdiction out of all of those seven states and provinces, for the amount of money we put into wildlife management.
Unreal.
Yep.
Well, I'm a little depressed
And you
now.
do get people that complain about increase. You do get people complaining about the price of hunting licenses and tags, and it's
Yeah,
like,
like
come
I
on,
don't know. I don't
guys,
get
you could
it, and
triple
I don't get it. I proposed something. This is going back a little a ways now. I went to a fish and game meeting here, and I brought up charging $5 more, a license or $5 more for the sorry for the application when you're if you don't like if you don't get a drawn, you still get, it was $7 at the time or whatever. And everybody just like looked at me like I had freaking 10. I'm like, dude, it's $5. I'm not a well-off person. I mean, I bust my ass every day to put, food on the table for my family. And I don't know. For me, it's like, okay, it's $5, but $5 from how many hundreds of thousands of people that put in, that's huge impact. Huge impact for if that's that money's, and I said that, charge an extra $5 and have that $5 go into like water development or whatever. Cause, in Arizona, that's one of our biggest things, not having enough water for the animals or habitat, just make it specific that it can't be used for the other BS shit that goes on in the bureaucracies over here. But, yeah, man, I couldn't get over how many people were like angry that I would even suggest something like that. Like they, I don't know. It's not like our resident tags and stuff here. And I'm just using Arizona as like, they're not ridiculous. I mean, it's like $42 for a deer or whatever. I travel, and maybe because I'm a guy who travels out of state, and then I paid $500-$600 to go, for a tag. And the whole trip cost me $3,000-$4,000, whatever, just driving there and gas and food and everything else.
Tags were the cheapest part of the trip,
Yeah,
yeah.
come on. I mean,
But they have the
what
greatest
else?
potential to generate revenue for conservation, so.
Exactly.
Yep.
So what the hell is another
Yeah, I
$5?
mean, I don't believe in things getting so high priced that it becomes elitist. But I definitely think, even if things were doubled, the average person could still
But
afford that,
I'm not
and the
even.
cumulative effect of that money would be significant. And
I
I mean, it's
think.
one of the things we faced here in British Columbia when we lost the grizzly bear hunt is, there was some outside organizations did an economic impact assessment of the grizzly bear viewing industry on coastal British Columbia and compared it to I think they just compared it primarily to the money that was made from guiding foreign hunters for grizzly bears, and like wasn't even close. There were some flaws in how the study was done. I mean, it was biased and stuff like that. But the general picture was viewing generated a lot more money. So as soon as hunters are like, well, hunting pays for conservation and stuff, and they're like, well, actually, this non-consumptive use over here generates a whole lot more, right? So that was attractive to politicians in their decision making. So that's another message I've got out there to people is like, there's a component of this is an economic war. So if you want to maintain your relevance, and sometimes when it comes to politicians, like we talked earlier, whether it's doesn't matter what it is in society, sometimes the bottom line is it employing people and is it paying its way and generating a tax base? That's fundamentally, the bottom line for a lot of elected
Honestly,
officials.
you said there's
And
a
man, if we
component of
don't
it. Oh, sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, I mean, if we don't start, bringing up that net worth, then it becomes an easy trade-off for politicians to make. So I'm like, man, do you need to suck it up and start paying a lot more if you want to stay in the game? So.
Well, I mean, you said it's a component. Honestly, I think when it comes to politics and the government, the almighty
The
dollar is
component.
number. It's the component. It's the number one. It really is.
No.
You know, and
No, I think so.
I was gonna say, like, for me, I think if the United States as a whole And in Canada, this would work for you too. If there was, like, again, I'll just use $5. If every single person out there that bought a tag in state, out of state, paid an extra $5 per tag that they buy or per hunting license that they buy that went specifically to conservation, like specifically towards a specific conservative or conservation goal. I think
Yeah.
that would be huge. And what would that mean for you? Me, I buy 12, 14 tags a year. I mean, that's more math than I could do in my head right now, but what is that, 100, like $125, you know? It's not going to make or break me, but that, and I don't know what the tag numbers are, but I'll just use 13 million hunters in North America, 13 million times $5. There you go. $65 million. $65 million. It goes right back into that wherever state it's collected in, goes back to that state's conservation. That, I mean, that's huge money. That's huge money. That's more than freaking BC has for that's 2 years for it costs. You know what I'm saying? But
Yeah, no, exactly.
it's like, yeah, I
You
don't
know, and
know.
it's these types of sort of, I guess if you want to call them cross-border discussions, I think are more important than ever right now in North America. And you know, last year, when the discussions, you know, that were going on over the grizzly bear hunt in British Columbia, I wrote a lot about it. I got a lot of blog articles up there, you know, just sort of painting the picture of how this whole thing was unfolding, how hunters were failing to resonate with the non-hunting community, to explain why they wanted to hunt grizzly bears, and why the folks that were trying to get the hunt stopped were so successful at what they were doing. I wrote a lot about that. One of the things I did write about in there, which was a frustration of mine, was basically the lack of attention from the North American and the international hunting community on this issue. And there are a lot of issues, you know, here in Canada, whether they're conservation issues or whether they're, you know, hunting related ones. But I really, really believe we've got to start having stronger cross-border dialogue to educate each other and start approaching these types of things like we're talking about, like, you know, funding and hunting and stuff. We need to start talking about them from a North American perspective. We stand on the North American model of wildlife conservation as, you know, our tenets of that support the argument for hunting in North America. And so I think we need to continue to stand on that. And when we have these bigger discussions about the future of hunting, recruitment, the amount of money that it contributes to the economy, I think we need to blow this discussion up into a North American one.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Absolutely. Well, cool. I'm sure we could sit here and go back and forth about every little aspect for the
Yeah,
next
it's
3, 4 hours,
pretty.
but unfortunately, and you and I are talking with each other, probably not gonna solve those issues. And what's even more sad is, and I hope that I'm wrong, and you and I will have this discussion in a month or two. Or we'll talk about it in a month or two, or a month or two after this has aired. I guarantee you that this particular podcast will have less downloads than my typical podcast. Well, my typical podcast is about hunting tactics
Yeah.
and trying to become better hunter, you know, help others become better hunters and so on and so forth, be more successful. I'm very curious. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I have a feeling people are going to look at the title, be like, "Eh, not really something I want to listen to," because I feel
No,
like
I
there's a
hear
lot of
you.
people
Yeah.
that don't have time, or at least they don't think they have time to care about it, because
Yeah.
it's not directly affecting them right now. But if you have kids, or you have grandkids, it will affect them, and it most certainly will affect their kids. So
yeah, and you know, with that, we just have to keep chipping away at it. We can't, you know, we can't be discouraged by downloads or lack of attention. I think it's a you got it. It's you're in it for the long run. And I think it's just you got to keep these discussions alive. Keeps talking about these topics. Like you said, sometimes I write stuff that that strikes a nerve with people because I don't have a problem if there's things going on in the hunting community and I'm like, this needs to change. Like, right. I'll rail on it as much as what I'll rail on people that are against hunting for, you know, basically using, you know, tactics and methodologies and stuff that are very, you know, disrespectful or you know, false information and stuff. So I don't have a problem because wildlife conservation is the most important thing to me, and that's you know where we all need to be pointed. But these discussions, we just got to keep moving them. And anybody that'll listen, and if it changes one person, to me that's a victory.
Yes.
And we just got to keep at it, man. Just keep at it.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. If it sounded like I was saying it's not worth it,
No, I know what you mean. Not, I mean, you do the same thing as me. You kind of get up, and then something kind of brings you down. But our long term, you know, if you draw a line through those ups and downs, our outlook, guys like you and myself, and you know others that you know that that feel this way, as long as our long term dedication to, you know, to these things and our outlook maintains, you know, is positive, it is realistic, but it's optimistic.
Right.
That's the course to hold steady. And yeah, I think at the end of the day, we will make a difference if we stay true to that, to those messages.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. Give our listeners where they can find your blog and find out more about you.
So yeah, it's pretty simple. It's just hunterconservationist.ca.
Cool, and everything's there.
Yep. Perfect. You'll read a little bit about me. You can reach out to me, and all the blogs are there. Quite a diversity of topics and stuff. So
yeah, I started reading your one about the burns. I started dipping into a little bit, but then I got sidetracked.
Yep.
I will put Mark's URL to his blog, his address, his web address, in the show notes, so cool. You'll be able to click on it straight from there. All right,
yeah,
Mark.
Love to hear from people. So it keeps me motivated. So
yeah. I tell that all the time. People, I'm like, it's that one guy once a month that I get that is like, you know, I really enjoy what you're doing, and da 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 da. That keeps me doing it, because the 10 or so bashing ones that I get a day don't help the situation. So
that one guy comes at like the 11th hour though.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. There's been a couple of times in my career, in my life where I was about to throw in the towel, and I had that one person reach out, and I was
totally,
like, oh,
I've had the same experience.
Perfect timing. Yeah. Perfect timing. All right, Mark. Thanks a lot. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Cool, man. Thanks, John.
Bye.
You bet.